Okay, afternoon, everybody, and a very warm welcome to this latest Original Thinkers podcast from Alliance Manchester Business School. I'm Jim Pendrell, I'm Research Communications Lead here at the school. I'm delighted today to be joined to my right by Becky Spate, who is Chief Executive of the RSPB, and also by Professor Paolo Quattrone, who is Professor of Accounting, Governance and Society here at the school, and also Director of the Centre for the Analysis of Investment Risk. Good afternoon, both of you. The subject of today's debate is around nature on the balance sheet, which might sound a rather odd thing to say, but actually it's a piece of area of work which is growing in traction all the time. And here I'm joined by an expert in this whole field, and also Becky, who's been doing a lot of work as well around this whole area. Just before we start, just first of all, a little bit about both of you. Becky, just briefly tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to your present role.
Well, it's a pretty eclectic story, Jim. I started off with an English degree, and then I was sponsored through an MBA, and then worked as a management consultant actually for quite a while. Worked on quite a few big mergers, so Diageo when Grammett and Guinness came together, Lloyd's TSB back in the day. And then my late 30s, I did a big change and I went to work for the National Trust. And ever since then, I've been on a kind of trajectory, I think, getting kind of more and more about nature. And that's how I've ended up kind of at the Royal Society for Protection of Birds and in a job that I think where I feel I have the chance to have some real influence over this nature crisis we're in and what we're going to do about it.
And how long have you been chief executive of the RSPB?
4 years.
4 years now.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And Paolo, just tell us a little bit about your research work. And I know this is an area you've been at the forefront of globally.
Well, I'm interested in how organizations and people make decisions. And then clearly the environment now is a key component of decision making, and how decisions affect the environment is particularly important. Being a professor of accounting, for me, the things that count are those that are accounted for. So if I see, if I count for bottles, I only see bottles and only count bottles. And currently the accounting framework is not particularly geared towards taking care of environmental issues. This is what led me to think, okay, what can we do in a way that is simple and possibly effective to make organizations and people aware of the fact that nature is an important stakeholder. And so if we want to guarantee the future of our kids or the future generations, and if we consider that corporations are one of the main engines of the economy in the world, the way in which they account for things has to change.
You kind of almost answered my first question to you, but I'll ask it anyway, which is how your work around this area, how it began, and actually what you're hoping for, what do you want to see? Mm-hmm. And also, to what extent these ideas around nature as a stakeholder are gaining traction. And my sense is that they are definitely starting to gain real traction. And also how it links in with the wider ESG frameworks, which we hear a lot of. So just tell us a little bit about where's all this journey started with in terms of nature as a stakeholder for you.
Yeah, you have to consider I'm not trained in the Anglo-American tradition of accounting. I'm Italian, as you can understand from my accent as well, not just my surname. And I think we always have been a bit more attentive, I would say, in the continental tradition to societal issues. And if you think of the German tradition, for instance, they had a different form of reporting income. The same thing in Italy, we had different formats of income statement. And so I thought, okay, maybe one place where we can start from is to rethink how we prepare our accounts and changing the format or the configuration of the final accounts of the balance sheet and income statement. And the solution that we have proposed is, I would say, simple, and this simplicity also brings a certain elegance to it. So at the moment, the income statement that people would know has got a clear focus, and that is profit and shareholders' value. That is only one of the possible focuses that an income statement could have. Going back to my childhood, I would say, when I was a student at the university, we studied six different formats of income statement, not just one. Now we tend to teach one, maximum two, and they do have a clear focus. Well, I'm old, but I'm not that old. So last century, but not last century, at the beginning of the century, last century in the 80s, there were more options, including in the fourth European directive, for instance. You could report in the Anglo-American way or in the continental way. And the continental way had a different format that basically accounted for the production and distribution of value. So how corporations and organizations produce value and how this is distributed among different stakeholders, in particular the workforce through salaries, capitalists through interest payments and dividends, the state through taxes, because the state provides infrastructure, and the firm itself, which is the institution that guarantees this, let's say, mediation among different stakeholders. And so my idea was very simple. Why don't we add a line on this income statement and we recognize another stakeholder, which is nature? And this would have an immediate effect that, for instance, would force companies to, and this would be a provision to a fund for nature in the balance sheet, which would create a couple of effects. So the first one is that companies will have to disclose what they do in relation to nature. What is interesting is that we, you know, there are three production factors: capital, labor, and land. So we reconstitute capital, financial capital, with dividend and interest. We reconstitute human capital with salaries. We do not reconstitute natural capital at all. And so our current framework is an exploitative framework, and this is why we get a profit. So instead, with this provision, you recognize that you have to reconstitute natural capital, and you have to say how and whether that is possible. There are also natural resources that cannot be reconstituted, but then companies have to do something to balance that lack of regeneration or the impossibility of regeneration.
And just tell us, probably perhaps a common misconception here is that you're talking about a particular value, but actually it's not a particular amount of money, is it, you're talking about? Is it more, it's more provision, it's more...
It's a provision, but so it's not cash. It's an income-related entry in the accounts. But this also means, I mean, if you think that then dividends can be distributed only if there is income and there, and then if there is cash, that means that someone has to decide, okay, rather than having this amount of income that is distributed, we have to distribute less. And so who is going to pay for this? So is the state that is going to pay, and so less taxes, or we pay more taxes and then the state takes care of nature? Or is it the workers who have to pay, who have to receive less remuneration? Is it capital that has to? So someone has to put the hands in their pockets. If I can add one thing, and I think this is, I think, the power of this proposal, is that currently, the common trends in environmental and social reporting are, you know, move towards the creation of measures that are not financial. So they leave the financial measures as they are, and they create other measures that try to assess whether corporations are environmental and socially friendly. But this leaves the question of who is going to pay for the reconstitution of natural capital out of the equation, while bring what with that provision, that becomes a question that these human stakeholders, in a sense, have to discuss every single year or every single quarter.
I mean, Becca, you've also been looking at this, haven't you, as a whole area as well. From your point of view, I mean, why do you think so few companies at the moment have any kind of plan for nature? Is it because they haven't got the structure or the balance sheet requirement to sort of force them to? You know, what, and if they are interested in these ideas, how do you get started? You know, what, you know, I suppose to what extent can companies get on with it anyway, you know, regardless, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Make their own moves in terms of, you know, encompassing nature and balance sheets.
I mean, I think the first thing to say is that, you know, at the RSPB, we would say there's an absolute intrinsic value to nature, you know, which is that it's just an amazing thing. And we want the next generation to be able to kind of enjoy it and appreciate it and kind of resource from it as much as this generation. So it's an intrinsic value. But when you start thinking about extrinsic value, and you can see, you know, the way in which, you know, our whole economy is owned by nature, actually. It's completely dependent on it. You know, so I think PwC have done a piece of work that says that 55% of businesses are either wholly or moderately, you know, dependent on natural resources. And so, you know, this becomes a fundamental kind of risk to our future economy. The fact that we are slowly, well, actually not that slowly in the last 50 years, kind of destroying biodiversity. You know, so if you look at the UK, for example, which, you know, we're all probably very familiar with, you know, we have a really kind of low intactness of our natural world now. Now, part of that's because of the Industrial Revolution. We've been kind of trashing it for a long time. But, you know, we're in the bottom 10% globally for the intactness of our natural world. And in the last 50 years, if you look at something like the recent State of Nature report, which is a sort of seminal report that comes out about every kind of 4 or 5 years, our scientists work on it at the RSPB, and scientists from about 70 organisations pool their data and say, what is the state of nature? And, you know, and the trajectories are all really bad. So, you know, you can see we've got 1 in 6 species at risk of extinction. We've got kind of, you know, a real drop in abundance of species. You know, everything is looking grim. Now, you could say, well, that's a terrible shame if you like kind of, you know, bird watching. But, you know, hey, never mind. But, you know, actually, you know, we are really dependent on the ecosystems that nature provides us with. We're dependent on them as a species ourselves, and our businesses, our economy is absolutely dependent on them. So how do you start to recognise that and reverse that trajectory? And what role does business have to play in that? And that's exactly what Paolo's talking about. How do you recognise that? And I think what's really interesting is that you've got, there was a great report, the Das Gupta report, which was commissioned by HM Treasury a few years ago, and very clearly said, this is a really big risk for the economy, and we have to start recognising the value of nature, the value of those ecosystems, and look at some of the constraints as well. So not just valuing what it is we are using now, but are there constraints beyond which we should not go, you know, in terms of our natural world? And it started to kind of really build that case. Now, I've seen a lot of reports putting an economic value on nature. You know, it's the kind of thing that NGOs like us love commissioning, is kind of how do you put an economic value on, you know, street trees, for example. But, you know, actually putting it into the balance sheet, the way in which Paolo's talking, is something that absolutely drives the issue to the heart of decision making. And that's where we've got to get it to make a difference. Doing it off the side of desks, or having a nice kind of project that's going on and is kind of funded out of kind of, you know, social responsibility, it's not going to do it. Mm. We have to get it to the heart of decision making.
And it's really, it's CEOs, they've got to be lead this. And as you say, not sort of just commissioning some reports, some consultant look at it. It's got to be at the heart.
I mean, what's really interesting is that I think a lot of businesses now, partly because of, you know, legislative changes, have absolutely woken up to the, you know, huge risk of climate change and what that's going to mean for their business, and recognising that risk and kind of, you know, making the changes that they need to make to get us to a kind of a net zero, you know, future. But I think they're only just starting to wake up to the fact that nature is the other side of that coin, and that actually, you know, there are some solutions to both the climate crisis and the nature crisis that can help each other. But nature is by definition Well, it's two things. One is it's more tangible because we all see nature outside our doors. So we kind of know what nature is. But actually, ecosystems, the things that really underpin our economy and our survival as a species, are a bit more intangible and they're very complex. So coming up with simple measures by which you can arrive at a value is quite a complicated thing. And I think that's where kind of carbon as a proxy has worked really well for the climate crisis and driving us on the right trajectory for that. Nature is more complicated.
Yeah. Do you think the concepts that Paolo's talked about there, do you think they're quite hard to grasp in some ways? You know, because it's, people will say, well, how can a balance sheet, affect climate change for the good? You know what I mean? Is there a bit of a disconnect there at the moment, do you think, between these very novel ideas and actually, helping to...
One of the things I love about Paolo's solution is it's actually incredibly simple.
It says
basically, we are extracting from nature, we are using nature to, deliver our business, deliver our outcomes. We have to put a value on that and we have to make sure that we're kind of maintaining that ability into the future for the business. I mean, that's basically what that balance sheet is recognising. That makes complete sense to me. It's what you do for lots of other things. On the balance sheet, but I think what makes it less tangible for people is a kind of gap between us and the natural world. Not realizing how dependent we are on the natural world for the air we're breathing, for the water we're able to drink, for kind of not getting home tonight and finding your house as being flooded. The food we eat. These are all things that are absolutely underpinned by natural ecosystems. And so that is true for our lives, it's true for our businesses. And if we push nature too far, and we're getting very close to that, then all of that becomes very uncertain and very frightening, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what needs to happen then to encourage more firms and organisations to sort of adopt these ideas? Paolo, what's next? What's the next step?
I think there are two ways of dealing with the issue. One is, of course, regulation. And so policies that force corporations to adopt these measures. But the other one is adoption in itself. So doing a bit of networking, doing a bit of lobbying and convincing companies that these are actually valuable and could bring, value to them in many different ways. I mean, what Becky was discussing in relation to becoming more aware of the risk of not treating nature in the right way is a quite important thing for corporations, and of course some initiatives like TCFD are doing that already.
Just help the listener review of TCFD. What's that?
Is the task force for natural
financial disclosure.
Okay. But the they're doing that in relation to, which is an important thing, in relation to what the investors risk. While what I'm trying to say is that there is not just the risk for the investors there. There is a risk for society as a whole in not considering nature as a stakeholder. And I'm glad that Becky actually signaled the point. This is a very simple solution. Mm. And also when you mentioned people can see nature, but they are not aware of the ecosystem. Putting that line there, and then the fund in the balance sheet will force people to reflect on these hidden relationships.
Yeah.
Because when you have to say, okay, I want to reconstitute nature, I want to then have constitute this fund, how do I use it? They will have to explore also, thanks to the work of your scientists, explore the ways in which nature is not an abstract thing, is related to particular relationships between the components of this ecosystem. And so I think that is particularly important, because the complicated regulations normally either fail or obscure things.
I was just going to ask you, of those two, if you like, solutions, regulation or self, just getting on with it, how do you think it's going to play out? Will it ultimately be auditors firms themselves just get on with it.
It's interesting that in part of the research that was sponsored by AICPA, CIMA, we interviewed a few companies that we were trying to find also companies that had similar solutions. And it's interesting that out of our search, we found two. One Italian company, which is a public utility, a small public utility that works in green energy production, and one large, very large estate company in Germany. And the CFO of this German company was an enlightened person, and he said, "Oh, I want to put nature on the balance sheet." But the auditor said, "No, you can't, because the regulations do not allow that, because it's not materially relevant." While the Italian company, being based in a particular region of Italy, which is completely autonomous and being owned by the regional and actually by the provincial government, they basically could do whatever they want. And they actually had that they had a different format of income statements. They had that provision there. They had a fund for nature. Then the community meets and decides collectively how these funds have to be used to maintain that is a beautiful part of Italy's South Tyrol. In fact, it's actually Austria. there are different stakeholders that meet around the table and discuss how these funds have to be used for the community. That brings me to the last part of your previous question, that is, how does this relate to ESG? Mm. And this becomes part of the G. And part of the S as well. So taking care of the E, which is the environment, implies a different form of governance. And so the income statement and balance sheet become instrument of governance as they were until, I would say, the last century, not being separated, just have reporting and the governance is a separate thing. But also keep society together, because these people have to meet, discuss, balancing trade-offs, because of course, when you take care of nature, then you have to sacrifice something else, and then maybe sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. And these are discussions that have to happen somewhere, and that some specific practices have to facilitate. Mm-hmm. And accounting is an interesting practice, because accounting is very powerful in mapping value chains, so production of value, distribution of value, but to the value chain is linked the supply chain and the demand chain, which affects exactly what you're saying. So the resources that
because
are consumed.
It's not an infinite resource, right?
It's not an infinite resource.
And I think that very word balance, this is what we're talking about. We're talking about making balanced choices. And at the moment, the whole system just doesn't do that. You know, it's crazy. And it's got to change.
To what extent are the RSPB yourselves looking at this, whether you can put nature on the balance sheet? Are you looking at this yourselves?
Yeah, so we have a small team of economists who are kind of, doing work in this area and trying to influence the kind of thinking that Paolo's talking about and making sure that happens. And we also work with businesses. You know, there are enlightened businesses who are, as ever, kind of forging the way ahead on this and actually going ahead of government and ahead of regulation to try and make this happen, because they can see that existential risk on their business, and they want to do something about it. And, there are enlightened individuals who are kind of driving that. So that is really interesting. And I think particularly that kind of nexus of climate and nature is really interesting for businesses, because they can see both things are a problem for them, and that they can, by, for example, kind of, investing in peatland restoration, for example, they can do something that actually tackles both of those issues at the same time. And by looking down their supply chain and really starting to look at kind of where they are doing that damage to nature, they can start to kind of value what that damage is, and then kind of do less of it, and also make the reparations that they might have to make in order to keep that balanced decision making happening. But it is one of the exciting things, I think, at the moment, is that business can move much faster than governments often around kind of regulation. But ultimately, they need that level playing field. And only regulation can provide that. So I think there is businesses that are running ahead. But ultimately, we need governments to kind of regulate around this, I think, in order to kind of make it really happen.
What's your sense, Paolo, that the extent to which, say, here in the UK, the government are beginning to grasp these kind of ideas, just generally, you know, without being
Okay, there are maybe a couple of things. I mean, there are the accounting bodies that are particularly sensitive to these issues. Our research was sponsored by an accounting body. So in terms of the profession, I think that the profession also instrumentally, but in a good way, sees an opportunity for regaining also legitimacy and visibility by taking care of environmental and social issues. Government, I mean, this is not a particularly good year, I would say, for what the government has been doing in relation to the environment. There were lots of discussions at last year and the year before about rethinking auditing, for instance, and that project has been parked. There is one thing back in what you're saying that is interesting in relation to that idea of balancing, and this relates to what we were discussing before coming here for coffee. That if the way in which we manage firms is driven by a conventional view of accounting that is about proportions, checks and balances, and making trade-offs between things, then we can open the space for a conversation. But if accounting and the regulation related to accounting are instead influenced and informed by a paradigm that instead pursues the maximization of shareholders' value, then you cannot have that balance because you have a clear focus. There is also another important thing that in accounting we have a clear distinction between means and ends. So money is a means. It's not at the end. While at the moment the current corporate code in the United Kingdom, for instance, it's all about means. And so means have become an end in themselves. Yes. But why do you want to make money? So, okay, we all want to make money, but why do you want to make money? At the moment it's making money for the sake of money. Where is the end?
Okay. Becky, I was just going to ask a bit more about the People's Plan for Nature, which is something I know you've been involved with. Tell us what that is, how it came about, and how it can help in this context of the discussion we're having.
Yeah. So the People's Plan for Nature was an idea that came about on the back of the BBC's Wild Isles series, which we co-produced alongside WWF and the Open University. And one of the things we wanted to do was to take that idea of the climate assembly, where a group of citizens was brought together and asked what we should do about the climate crisis. And so we did it for nature. So we brought together a completely randomised sample of the population to come together and to hear from a series of experts about what was going on in terms of the nature crisis, to hear the evidence, if you like, and then to debate amongst themselves and come up with a plan for what we should do about it and what we should be asking our governments to do about it. So it was no more and no less than that. But it's incredibly powerful because a number of those people, and I've met many of the people who were in that group, had no interest in nature whatsoever before joining that assembly. But completely kind of took on board what they were hearing from a huge range of experts and very much came up with some very powerful things that they thought that that governments and we should be doing about the nature crisis. And one of the ideas was putting kind of nature on the board, the idea that you would have this director for nature at the heart of decision making for businesses. So that was a really interesting idea. And those ideas have been kind of turned into, a sort of manifesto, I suppose, for what should happen. But it was a great exercise. And what was really interesting was that once people know and understand what is going on, they really want to do something about it. And they really want to see something done about it. And I think that sort of people power will have an influence on businesses because they will be feeling that. If they're not feeling it now, they are going to feel it in the future from their consumers, from their kind of their shareholders. You know, they are going to feel that push because, people are waking up to the fact that we need to do something and we need to do something soon to sort this out. And I think that's an extremely powerful thing. It's extremely powerful for politicians. Mm-hmm. It's extremely powerful for businesses.
Mm-hmm. And and the second part of that question was what do you think it tells us about? Well, sorry, what do you think it tells businesses about their consumers and customers, etc.? I guess it's a useful way of tapping into that.
Well, I think it says to businesses, be alert to what is going on and to the way in which people are starting to feel about it, and the way in which they will, I think, absolutely start to vote with their feet. I think it's interesting, businesses, I mean, you know, big employers now are bringing in, you know, a raft of young people into their businesses as employees who feel really strongly about this stuff. I mean, I see it in the RSPB, obviously, because we're likely to attract people who have a really sort of strong kind of value set around what we need to do about this. But I see it in young people, not across the board, but more generally as well, and going into lots of businesses and wanting to see their employers playing a responsible role, a balanced role in how we are going to sort ourselves out, because we are in a big mess. Mm-hmm.
And if I can add one point to what Becky is saying, is, you know, there are especially younger generations who have this set of values. They don't have a coherent set of practices. Mm. And so this is why this idea is interesting, yeah, because it provides a coherent set of practices that matches this, you know, new attention to an urgent attention to not only environmental but also social issues. I mean, the value added statement, for instance, changes the ontology of the workforce from a resource that needs to be used and reduced to a resource that needs to be remunerated. So you have to create more value because the workers need more money. It's not that you want to make more money, and by making more money, you need to squeeze the workforce, mm-hmm, or nature as well. Mm-hmm.
Just go back to something you mentioned before about regulation, and I'm just struck by to what extent, you know, policymakers should be forcing companies to embrace this agenda. I mean,
There is also, I mean, I don't want to be too critical here, but also we have to understand the nexus of relationships between governments and businesses, and so to what extent is the a policy independent from business in a way that could be that could, you know, produce regulations that work in the interest of the public. And so I think that regulation is needed, and you said that, mm-hmm, but also in order to push the regulation in a good direction, maybe a movement of those enlightened people needs to be built, mm-hmm, to constrain or to make sure, because that is also a matter of trade-offs, right? The government, by definition, has to, mm-hmm, make a trade-off between different interests. And of course, the corporations have their own legitimate interest, but they're not the only interest. And so I think government has got a responsibility there, but we have a responsibility as well in pushing the government in the right direction, not just in this country, but in every single country. Because otherwise, you know, in terms of, we were discussing earlier, this article from, I think it was The Guardian, who says that the COP28, the larger number of participants were lobbyists from the corporate world. Mm. They have much more power resources than other stakeholders. And so creating a movement, I'm happy now to have met Becky. We will meet Simeon later. And these things, as you rightly said, once people understand, they cannot go back. Mm. So they understand that, you know, this needs to be done, that there is a way of being done, and possibly other solutions are sometimes smokes and mirror rather than actual solutions. I don't want to say that what we're saying is the solution, but at least it's a simple and elegant solution, yeah, and brings the conversation back to what people at the moment particularly care, which is money in their pocket.
Mm. And just also for the earlier point about gaining traction, my sense is these ideas are starting to gain a lot more traction. I mean, you're best anybody. Do you think they are now?
I think the idea not only of nature as a stakeholder, but also, for instance, future generations as a stakeholder is gaining traction, lots of traction. So if I look at that just as a researcher who reads research articles, you see the mushrooming of contributions saying, okay, how do we take care of future generations? Mm. How do we take, we have a work in progress, which is about giving voice to voiceless or absent stakeholders. So nature does not have a voice. I mean, we can see natural changes, and so in a sense, nature speaks, mm-hmm, but we interpret that those signals that nature gives us. Future generations are not even there, so they are absent as stakeholders. But we need to take care of them. And again, in order to do so, you need to have platforms where these conversations and imagination about what a different planet and a future planet could look like happens. I think accounting is a very powerful platform of imagination. This is what accounting was designed for in the Middle Ages.
So. Yeah, and there are similar kind of changes going on, you know, in terms of law, you know, yeah. So the idea of ecocide, you know, yeah. it's very correct. Much coming to the fore, kind of the idea that kind of, you know...
What's that?
So, you know, doing so much damage to nature that it's kind of ecocide, it's causing an ecosystem to absolutely collapse, you know, that is a legal kind of definition that you can be kind of taken through the law courts for doing that. Mm-hmm. And the idea of giving something like a river, for example, kind of rights, you know, it's very interesting, I think, that this thinking that's going on in the accounting world and it's going on in the legal world as well. And it's all kind of coming to the fore. I mean, I just wanted to touch for a moment on kind of the idea of, a lot of the time we hear it's all right, we'll have a voluntary framework around this. We'll have a voluntary kind of approach. And that's obviously often what a government will kind of start off with. But at the end of the day, it's not enough for it to be voluntary.
They can't afford to be voluntary.
Yeah, it's not enough for it to be voluntary. And it just kind of, we have to get to a place where we've got that level playing field. And that means that we've got the kind of right regulation and frameworks in place to make this something that everybody has to do. Mm. Because without that, you get into the kind of system we've got at the moment, for example, around things like kind of, you know, carbon credits, for example. You get into a kind of a cowboy kind of industry, and it just doesn't work. So we have to kind of, what regulation can do is kind of introduce the kind of the frameworks that mean that it's a real thing, and it absolutely does make a real difference.
Mm. To what extent are you, as an organisation, lobbying, you know, with the government on these sort of issues at the moment? You must speak to government quite a lot, I thought. I mean, is this something which you're really pushing?
Yeah, it's absolutely something we're pushing. Yeah, because yeah. I think without it, we're not going to get there soon enough. And that's the issue. This is not something that we can kind of take a long time over because of the urgency of what we're now facing into. You know, you mentioned COP28, you know, and the urgency obviously around kind of climate change, but the urgency around biodiversity collapse is very real as well. And it is this decade, really. When we've got to kind of make the big decisions that will get us on a better trajectory and get us kind of at least able to adapt to the changes that are already baked in, and then kind of get us on the restoration trajectory. And if we don't manage to do that, I think in the next sort of 7 years, then we probably are in a lot of trouble.
Okay,
I'll
follow that one, but perhaps as a final thought for both of you, what you'd want people listening to this podcast take away from it, if there's perhaps one thing they could take away
for me, the most important thing is to realize not only that nature is a stakeholder, but we can actually try to interpret the voice of this stakeholder through very concrete accounting solutions that will link financial issues to non-financial issues, and in particular environmental issues.
For me, it's that the nature crisis is as serious as the climate crisis, and they're two sides of the same coin, and we have to tackle both. B, that I think business can be part of the solution. So, you know, I think if businesses choose to do the right thing and kind of do the trailblazing that we've been talking about, then businesses can absolutely be part of the solution. And C, I think recognising the dependence that we have on these ecosystems that nature provides us with that are not valued at the moment, and that there are constraints around that. It's not an infinite resource. And so we have to really think about what growth means for us and how we're going to grow a better world, not just a richer world.
Well, that very fitting note, I think we'll end it there. But thank you, Becky, for your comments and thoughts. And Paolo, likewise, it's been a fascinating discussion. Thank you both.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.